Okay, I'm all in.
This is the only poker show in St. Louis radio.
I want to hold them like they do in Texas, please.
With the only St. Louisan to make it to the final table of the World Series of Poker main event.
Shuffle up the deal.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
And we are live in the Lumiere Place Poker Room at Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel in downtown St. Louis, and happy to have you along at the final table.
How's it going today, Paul?
It's going very well, although I will tell you, every time we come down here, particularly because the high-stakes game gets played on Tuesday night, but just being in a poker room and hearing the sound of chips,
yeah,
it gets my heart going a little bit faster, doesn't it?
It really does. Sometimes, and I start sliding my chair back to watch the games behind us. Every table again here looks like it's full.
Yeah.
So this is just sweet.
Well, they've got this tournament that starts at 6 o'clock just as we go on the air, and they do that every night of the week, and then they've got those noontime tournaments as well. Mm-hmm. But speaking of being in a room full of chips, I never asked you about this, because last year was your first exposure in person to the World Series of Poker. I had actually been out there a couple of times, never played in the main event, played in a couple of the smaller $1,500 events, and didn't cash either year that I played in those. But the first time I went out there and got into the Amazon room at the Rio,
yes,
with hundreds of tables in there, and when I went, they still had the tent out back the first year.
Oh, wow.
Which was overheated and uncomfortable for most of the players who were out there, but it also had another 100 or 200 tables. I don't even know how many it was. At times, the only sound you could hear was the riffling of chips and this general murmur in the room. There wasn't a lot of talking going on, even at the low-level events. When you played in this, the main event, the $10,000 buy-in, what was that experience like for you as a rookie?
It's almost impossible to describe because I'd never experienced anything like that before. They give you not only a number but a color because there's so many tables they have to coordinate them back and forth for rooms and everything like that now. They do have them all inside. There is no more tent set up on there, so we all at least keep a little cool, calm, and collect inside. But it is just unbelievably awesome.
When you looked around that room and saw all of those people, did you think to yourself, I can't possibly beat these people?
I had a half a second where I thought, there's the exit. But I didn't do that. No. It was, and the other nice thing about it is the way they welcome you out there. Everybody's friendly. Everybody helping directing. You know, you're sitting down at the table. The dealers are very professional and very well done. The other players, a lot of them, that's their first time, too, on it. No, it was, you were made welcome.
I will tell you, the first time I played, I sat down at the table, and I was about 10 minutes early. And I noticed most of the other people hadn't sat down yet, so I kind of stood there like I knew what I was doing. And I'd played in lots of tournaments before, but this was the World Series of Poker, and it was a $1,500 event. And I had paid cash to get in. My plane had landed about 10 o'clock that morning, and I was in at noon, so I didn't have time to satellite into this thing. I planned on being out there for a few days, and I think maybe a whole week, and I was going to play a lot of cash games because that's what I usually play. And so I was standing there next to the table, and another guy came and stood next to me and introduced himself, and we were talking. It was his first time also, but he had played in other events, at other circuit events around the country. And he saw a well-known poker pro walking towards our table, and he said out loud, oh, please don't be at our table. Please don't be at our table. Please don't be at our table. And as the guy got to within about 5 feet of our table, and I'm not going to say who this pro was, as he got within about 5 feet of his table, he asked the dealer, where is table number 270? And the dealer said, it's down that row towards the end. And this pro turned and went that way. And I turned to the guy next to me, this other rookie, and said, what, you didn't want him at our table because he's a pro? And the guy said, no, because I've heard he's a jerk. I played against him in a circuit event, and I just don't want to be around that guy.
Whoa, that came out of left field to me. I wasn't expecting that.
Now, isn't that interesting?
Very.
Now, when you went out and played, did you think to yourself, I hope I'm not around any big-name pros?
No, actually, it didn't bother me. I didn't want to be in the first table. I wanted to sit down with a group of people that I didn't recognize, that weren't images from TV, and sit and relax and get comfortable at it. But then I actually did want to play against a couple. I wanted to be able to tell people if I got knocked out that, hey, I sat across from Jeff Mattson and played hands with him or whatever.
Yeah.
So, no, I wanted to play with them.
Eventually you did.
Eventually I did.
Yeah.
Eventually I played with a lot of them.
You did play with a lot of them and beat a lot of them.
This is true.
On your way to coming in third in the main event as part of the November 9.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of guys who have reputations, our guest tonight certainly qualifies for that. Hevad Khan,
known as
Rain Khan online. Talk about a guy who has changed his image. He'll be joining us in just a few minutes, and we'll talk about his adventures in the last couple of WSOPs, his plans for this year's main event and other events. And I hear he's off to a pretty good start in the 2009 tournament world as well.
Absolutely, and we'll talk to him about it, but I've already played against him in a couple of tournaments this year. He'll be playing in a lot more. Absolutely.
So he'll be joining us in a few minutes, as well as another visit with the poker coach, Joe McGowan, who last week started talking about tells and I thought had some terrific information. Tonight we have to make sure we leave a lot of extra time, because I think Joe has a lot of terrific information to pass along. Yep. Some of this he did for you as your poker coach leading up to November.
What, it's so nice being able to talk at a nice level to somebody like Joe. He's been through it all. He has the experience. He has the knowledge, and he's willing to impart it.
Absolutely. So all of that coming up tonight here on the Lumiere Place Final Table. This portion of the show is brought to you by Bridell Remodeling, your full-service remodel company. Families and even businesses in the Metro East know Bridell Remodeling is the company to call when they need work done on their home. If you're thinking about remodeling your kitchen, whether it's fixing that old sink or putting in new cabinets or putting in new countertops or turning the breakfast nook into something that seats more than two, Bridell Remodeling can help you with that. Kitchens, basements, bathrooms, or a room addition, which you may be thinking of putting on your house this year. Go to the website athomewithron.com and find out what Ron Bridell and his company have done for other people. You'll see that they are an award-winning interior design company. They won the 2006 Best Interior Award from the Home Builders Association. And when you call Bridell Remodeling at 618-345-8840, you'll never deal with one of those touch-tone answering systems that says, push one for this, push two for that, push three for the other thing. You'll always speak with a live person. For more information, go to the website athomewithron.com. That's Ron Bridell and Bridell Remodeling, one of the sponsors of the Lumiere Place Final Table here on 590 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
Whether you play poker in a home game, a cash game in a casino, or online, this is the show for you. It's the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 the Fan, KFNS.
And welcome back to the poker room of the Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel in downtown St. Louis. Paul Harris and Dennis Phillips, joined now by the man whose nickname is Rain. He's Hevad Khan, another member of Team Poker Stars Pro, and a guy who you know pretty well because he played with you last November, right?
In the last few months, we've become friends. We've met each other in a lot of different tournaments. I've got a lot of respect for this guy's game. He's got a lot of game. And he did play with me out at the Chip Leader Challenge prior to the final table in November.
Yeah. Hevad, welcome to the Lumiere Place Final Table.
Hey, Hevad, it's great to be here.
All right, well, we appreciate it. We hear you are doing rather well this year. What are you trying to do, become Player of the Year?
Yeah, making a run of Player of the Year, playing as many tournaments as I can. Right now, I'm at the Wynn Classic in Las Vegas. After this ends, I'm going to head over to Bay 101 in San Jose. I'm going to go over to Foxwoods for the World Poker Classic. And then I'm going to fly out for, during that time, I'm going to play the Scoop on PokerStars, where they're running a ton of tournaments.
Yes, they absolutely are.
Absolutely.
So how's your year been so far? You've been cashing a lot?
Well, before 2009, I won the Caesars Palace Championship for $1 million, and at the PokerStars Caribbean Adventure, where me and Dennis met up once again on the road to playing all these tournaments, I took down the PCA 2K for about $200,000. And since then, I've just been cashing here and there.
That's terrific. And I understand you just played in the NBC Heads Up Poker Challenge. Is that right?
Oh, that's right. I forgot to mention that. Yeah, I lost round one to Scotty Wynn. It was very intense heads up match. We got to, I think, the fifth line level, and then it became more of a shove fest. My pocket nines were no good against his ace jack all in preflop. Two jacks could win the match, and congratulations to Huckleberry Seed, but also a big congratulations to Vanessa Russo for getting so far.
Oh, yeah, she's a heck of a... We talked about her in the last couple of weeks in a couple of shows, being with GoDaddy now and everything else. Heck of a player and very, very intelligent young woman.
So was Scotty your first round opponent?
Well, actually, honestly, the match was very one-sided. I think I probably won for an hour straight, like, 90% of the pots, and I had him chipped down like to probably half the stack, and then I lost maybe one or two medium-sized pots. We got even in chips, and then I had to make a big fold with trips against him, and I was right. He showed me a full house, but the problem with making laydowns in the NBC structure means that you probably just lost most of your chips, and then I got it all in with nines, and I was eliminated.
Yeah.
What is the difference in strategy from playing in a ring game or a full table tournament table to playing simply heads up like that? I know you've done it when you've come in first in some of these tournaments, but when you're playing just heads up, what's the difference in strategy?
Well, you have to know how your opponent plays, and based upon how he plays, that's going to allow you or not allow you to play more or less hands. And the other thing is that when you ever have the button, it's very important to play that, because in a heads-up match, you're either going to be out of position or in position half the time. You know, it switches back and forth, so it's very important that you utilize the button more often, play a little bit more hands.
Do you get more aggressive heads-up?
Oh, absolutely. You have to be more aggressive. Most of the time, you and your opponent aren't going to be making hands, so it's actually a very interesting game, and there's a lot more bluffing and a lot more putting people to the test. So there's going to be a lot more re-raising and et cetera.
Oh, yeah. If you're on the button, it's almost an automatic raise if you're really getting aggressive on those hands.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that that brought Javad to, I guess, fame or whatever was his ability to play all these poker games at once on the computer. Somebody claims you can play 43 at once on your computer.
Yeah, okay. That was actually me. I was testing it out. I was normally doing between 30. Yeah, I know. It's pretty crazy. I don't really do it anymore, but when I did, I was probably 50 pounds lighter and had more energy. But, I played 43. That's the most I've ever done at once. I usually was doing anywhere from 32 to 38 every day. I was playing about 250 singles a day on PokerStars. I ran up the Supernova thing immediately every month. It was, like, not even a joke. But when I tried to make a run at the Supernova Elite with Elky, and in the process I went broke, so I quit singles, and now I play tournaments, and that's gone really well for me.
You know, I've seen the YouTube video that you made when you were playing. I think the first one I saw was when you were playing 21 sit-and-goes at the same time. Was that right?
Absolutely, yeah. That was 26 sit-and-goes, actually.
26 sit-and-goes at the same time. Now, when I watched the video of it, which is basically the camera pointed at your computer screen, all you kept hearing was beep, 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 because what it does is it automatically brings up what the current hand you've got to play from the various tables. And I thought to myself, well, it's pretty obvious to me that Javad's entire strategy here is fold until he gets aces on every one of these tables. Could that possibly work?
Yeah, it worked, because I did it at the $16 level. So, I mean, people are just open shoving king four in the first hand just because they, you know, they either don't care or, you know, they just, maybe they registered on accident, and maybe they just have $50 and they just want to make a run at something and gamble. So, you know, you can play a really solid strategy to play, like, top hands, you know, like, really only the premiums. The thing is that, like, the fact that that works means the opponents you're playing against must be extremely incompetent. So when I tried doing it at the higher levels, I had to lower the tables. But when I tried doing 30 at once at even the highest levels, I lost a lot of money because I was playing with the same 10 people, and they were only playing, like, two tables. So the advantage you can have is really slim. In fact, I was probably losing. That's why I quit.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, when you were playing 26 sit-and-goes at the same time, did the people at the tables have any idea that you were playing 26 sit-and-goes at the same time?
Oh, absolutely. The PokerStars client, if you just search my name, it would just show, like, a giant list of all the tournaments I was in. Everyone's like, wow. Wow. A lot of tournaments.
Okay, you're a better man than me. I would not even try to play 26 at the same time.
And would your opponents then know if you're playing that many? And I'm asking, in case I'm ever online and I'm playing against somebody who seems to be only playing premium cards, should I know, okay, this guy's playing a lot of different tables at the same time, and so he's only going to come back at me with aces, kings, or queens, and does that give me any kind of advantage against you?
It gives you an incredible advantage, because if you know I only play those hands, then you could probably raise on my blind every single hand, and you're guaranteed those chips. And when you have, like, kings or aces, then you could pretty much get it all in with me, because I'm only going to have, like, aces, kings, or queens, or something like that, right? So aces and kings kings are still a good bet, because I'll get in with queens and ace king, right? And if I have kings as well, we chop. And if I have aces, that's just it's a cooler, right? So you can pretty much just say, okay, if I play these hands against this guy, there's no way I'm not going to make this much money in the long run every hour.
We're talking with Javad Khan here at the Lumiere Place Final Table, Paul Harris and Dennis Phillips. When you are playing online normally, not trying to set world records going up to 43 at a time, how many games do you play normally?
I'm actually playing online right now, standing in the subway talking to you guys. I'm playing the PokerStars Super Tuesday, actually. I'm 3,000 starting chips. It just started, but when I do play now, I usually like to play on Sundays and play a lot of tournaments. I'll probably have, like, eight tables going. I got, like, you know, a brand new laptop. It cost me like $5,000, but it's got the max resolution, so I can easily pile like 12 tables on there, no problem. It'll be tiny, but because the resolution is good, I can still see the cards, and you can still read the players because you just you get your eyes focused on it, so you can kind of see who's raising a lot of buttons and who's opening a lot in mid position or whatever. Yeah,
you're actually picking up tells on that many opponents at the same time.
Yeah, not as much as if I were playing live or playing one or two tables online, but, I mean, if you want to trade it for volume, like, I think I have a much better chance of winning a tournament on Sunday if I can focus pretty good on eight tables versus focusing really well on one or two tables.
Do you use any of that poker tracking software?
A lot of people use Poker Tracker and all that. I just, you know, I can't get used to it because I feel that a lot of my friends that have used it have almost based the information and stats they gain off older players in a cash game or a tournament off the small sample, and they play, they develop their strategy based on those numbers, but those numbers have to be extrapolated over an extremely large sample, like billions of hands to be really accurate. So the best thing you can really do is just use that just to save the hands and review your hands kind of like a notepad, you know, like your homework. But don't, like, take the numbers and be like, okay, well, if this guy plays 17-11-2, I should never fold this hand, because things are not... black and white poker is very dynamic, you know. There's many shades of colors and everything. You have to kind of go in there and play how things went in the last hour. You know, sometimes people go on tilt after playing solid game for a month straight, and, you know, things happen. Things happen to people's lives. You know, their minds change. They want different things, and they don't play as well.
Your image, I guess you'd say, has changed a little bit, it seems like. You know, you came on there, you were like a Bobby Fischer-type player with all these poker games you're playing on a computer. I don't think people really knew a lot about you. You bust on the scene there in 07 and kind of took it by storm quite a bit. And you definitely were the life of the party there in a few of the tournaments on that. How has it matured a little bit for you? Have you changed your game a little bit? Have you tried to change your image consciously? Or you know, you've got a heck of a good game. I'll give you that, period. That's a given. But your image is definitely changing, and changing for the good.
I agree with you, too. I mean, I think you're a very good player, Dennis. You know, we played that satellite. You made a good laydown against me. I had a big hand that time. Unfortunately, we didn't get a chance to play against each other in the LAPC. I really wanted to see how your game's come along since the World Series. But I did enjoy watching the telecast and the hands we talked about while you were at the final table. A great finish, indeed. Third place. How's my image changing and all of that? Like, I pay attention to it all the time because, you know, in the past, whenever I sat at a table, they're like, oh, man, it's the guy from TV. Now, people still say that probably one out of every three tables I sit on where I don't know my opponents, but it's different now. I think people view me as a competitive player, and because now I'm a competitive player, you know, people don't call me as much. After the World Series, they would never fold to me because they thought I was a crazy, you know, insane guy from TV. So I would just play tight, and I would have huge stacks in every tournament. Now whenever I play pots, nobody calls me because they know that I'm good at the game. But it's not that they know I'm good at the game. It's because the TV is portraying that I'm a serious player. And people generally, you know, think a serious player is going to have a good hand. So have I been maturing? Yeah, I've done a lot of traveling. I've done a lot of thinking. You know, when you first hit that kind of TV fame, you just feel euphoric. You feel like, you know, it's too much for you to handle. So I took some time off. And as I got more competitive, I traveled. I wanted different things, and I pursued different things. And in the end, I came back to my roots, and now I'm back into the poker.
The way you played on your way to finishing sixth at the 2007 main event and ended up winning nearly $1 million, that was the year of the outrageous Hawad Khan, the King Khan, if you will, the way you were acting. How much of that do you think got people to call you more often just because they wanted to get this SOB?
Probably like 80-90% of the reason why I get called by trash is what they saw on TV. But things are different now, and then they're probably going to be different after people listen to the show, so I'll probably have to change again.
Well, again, in poker strategy has so many different levels. One of the levels is actually knowing what your table image is, and it sounds like you've really perfected that well. So if you can project a different table image even and take an advantage of it, is that what you're trying to do now? With like at the beginning, when you start out with a couple of thousand people in a tournament, can you still take advantage of it then?
Absolutely. It's come to the point where I can just feel what people are just thinking and stuff like that. Like, when you play this game that much, you're mastering your ability to read human beings. And I've gotten a lot better socially, so now I can kind of sympathize for why and reason why they're changing. Not just instinctively feel that they're going to call me lighter now because they think whatever, but I can also understand because I now I know how, you know, all kinds of people think. I've gotten a lot better at it. So, I mean, I guess the only real thing is just to play more tournaments and make sure you come in there ready to sit there and pay attention to everything, because when you're not paying attention, somebody else is, and he just now got one extra point up on you and a better chance at winning the whole thing.
Words of wisdom, folks. You should listen to that. That's exactly right.
Hevad, I know you started out in high school as a gamer. When did you turn into a poker player?
I turned into a poker player right when we graduated high school. Me and my buddies played a five-card draw game in my friend's basement. I probably lost $200 in a week at a $500 or $5 buy-in. It was a pretty big disaster. But when I went to school, I just started playing a lot of online because I had access to it, and I had one of those debit cards, you know, back when you could actually deposit. I probably lost like $15,000 before I started winning.
What was your inspiration to play so much? Were you watching a lot of poker on TV and seeing guys like Chris Moneymaker and who's the guy who was before him, Robert Varconi, and those guys? Were they part of your inspiration to play poker?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and not just that, but Elkie as well. When I watched it on TV right when Moneymaker won, it looked really cool. The whole, like, I was like, well, I play this poker game too, and, like, how do I get into this tournament? And I thought, oh, it must be a big deal to get into the World Series main event, so I just played and played and played until I eventually got to what I want to do. But seeing them on TV like that, it was just, you know, it's a chance at fame, but it seems so realistic to achieve it because you see everybody entering it. So it's kind of like the American dream in a little microcosm.
So you started out as a young player, and now you're playing against guys on the tournament circuit who are probably younger than you. What do you see about the new young players' style that might be different from the way you played or the veterans who were the old guys when you got into it, how they played?
It's a lot more liberal. It's very aggressive. Players are a lot more fearless because they have more chances to play online at PokerStars. They can play all the biggest tournaments to it. I mean, they're playing for $200,000 every Sunday, and if they win that, I mean, that's $200,000 they have to go play these live tournaments. And not just that, but if they have good success online, they pick up backers. So now they're financially secure. They can enter these tournaments. They can practice the strategies they learn online. And they can combine their confidence with their experience, and over time they become very good players in a much shorter amount of time.
Well, I noticed on the high-stakes poker, they were interviewing Doyle, and they were talking about some of the starting hands and how these younger guys are starting with just crazy-type hands. Just how widespread is your starting hand, shall we say? I mean, are you willing to throw it in there with a 5-6 of hearts or a 9-10 of clubs or who knows what on it? How widespread do you do your starting hand?
I don't like to make rules at all. I feel that like if there's like a raise and a call and say I'm short stacked, I'll move in there with anything if I really believe that I'm never being called. But I have to really believe now. I have to think about what hands is that guy calling with, what hands that guy raising with. How often is he going to fold to my move all in? And you base that upon how you've been playing and how much they respect you. So yeah, what you see with a lot of these online players is that they'll move it in with anything because they're actually very well experienced. So even if they are wrong, they're not upset with it because they have their experience and the math and a lot of support from all their other friends who they respect in their games to understand that the play is still good from a principal perspective. So even if they're wrong, they're not going to be like embarrassed about it because, you know, they have a certain comfort with their own niche of players, and if their own niche of players agrees with that form of play, then he'll do anything, you know. But if it's looked down upon, then he'll probably never do it. So actually, it's kind of like they made their own rules about how to play poker because there's a certain way to play, but now, they'll look at how a lot of live players play where they call re-raises with King 10 suited, and the online player will be like, whoa, you can't do that. You can only call with high pairs or ace-king. So that could be considered good, but it just goes both ways, really. I mean, it depends upon the person thinks that. Really,
it does.
It really just depends, yeah, who, what is considered good from what group or community of poker.
When your players are playing a wider range of hands, is that good or bad for you as an opponent?
Obviously, it's better if you can put them on less hands because then you're much more likely to be correct if they're going to call down a bluff.
Yeah.
A lot of times when I sit in, especially at the beginning of a tournament, I try to play opposite of the table. If they're going to sit back and be timid and non-aggressive, I'll try and take control of the table. By the same token, if I've got a couple of young guys that are out there pushing with almost anything, I'll sit back and do some trapping and everything on it. Do you ever do a strategy like that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay. I think that I completely agree with you. If they're gonna do that, then I'll trap as well.
Yeah, I love trapping somebody when they're super aggressive. one of my rushes.
you know, in reading up on you, Hevad, I think I found that you and I have something major in common. We both dropped out of the State University of New York system.
Okay.
Yeah, I had one semester to go, and I just said bye because I just something was going to happen that summer.
Something was going to happen that summer, like a poker tournament?
Yeah, I just knew I was going to do well in the World Series. I told myself there's no way that I can miss the World Series, and I'm willing to drop out of college to make sure I get to play every event I get to play there that summer. That's how much I knew college was useless for me, and that's how much I knew poker was good for me. Some people that get into this game will always win because they just believe, and they don't believe based upon principle what other people tell them. They believe because they just know it in their heart.
Yeah, I dropped out to take a $90 a week radio job. But you know what? That's worked out for me in the long run, too.
Yeah. And that was a couple more years than you.
Now we're both there together. You know, we start at one end and meet at the other end.
Yeah. With the changes they have in the WSOP this year, the inclusion of the 40,000 buy-in and that, how many events do you think you're going to be playing this year, and what ones in particular?
I'm going to play every single no-limit event. I want to get a bracelet.
That's the goal this year?
Yeah, I'll play the 40K. I won't play the horse just because I can't even spell horse. And I'll play all the 1500s because I always cash in those things. I think they took in the 5Ks and the rebuys, which I'm kind of upset about because I want to go into the 1K rebuys this year. But, you know, that's okay. Whatever.
Why do you like rebuy tournaments?
Well, because you can stack up a lot and you can be all in the first couple levels, and I'm sure it'll cost you more, but you won't be out of the tournament. There's nothing worse than being out of a tournament where there's a lot of money for first.
Okay, we've got different philosophies. Barry was one of the people that voted against it. Greg Raymer was one of them upset that wanted to play the rebuys on it. So we're kind of taking a mini poll here, I guess, as we talk to different people on the pros and cons for it. So you played all the rebuys last year?
Yeah, I played both the rebuys last year. I didn't cash in either.
Oh, okay.
Well, Chabad, we appreciate you taking time to be on with us today, and we hope that your pursuit of Player of the Year goes well. Is there a chance at any time this year we'll see the return of King Khan?
I don't want to say no, but, I guess you guys got to look out for it and see what comes. I'm still the same excited guy. I just need something to be excited about.
You know, I think that incredible Hulk-like personality is still lingering inside you, and somebody's going to hit you at the table the wrong way with the wrong hand, and all of a sudden the shirt's going to tear, you're going to go crazy, and you'll turn into that Hulk King Kong kind of character. And I hope there's a TV camera nearby when it happens.
Yeah, me too.
Well, let me tell you, I've played with this gentleman several different times, got a lot of respect for his game, and it's only improving. I don't particularly want to be at his table on these events in the World Series of Poker. I'd rather meet him at the final table. So.
All right.
Chabad, we appreciate your time today. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.
Take care, my friend. I'll talk to you later.
Chabad Rain Khan, another member of Team PokerStars Pro here at the Lumiere Place Final Table. This portion of the show brought to you by PokerStars.net.
PokerStars, it's the place that I play in. If you want to play a game against me, you need to log on to PokerStars, and we will see what happens. It's where we had our free roll, where we're going to have our future free rolls, where we've had a lot of fun. This is the industry's premier software and the largest poker site in the world. I don't care what size of game you want to play, small, medium, or large. I don't care what type of game you want to play, and I don't care what time it is. It's there on PokerStars.net. Log into it. There's always a seat open. Anytime you want to be delved into a game, go to PokerStars.net, the world's largest poker room.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table, live from the Lumiere Place Casino Poker Room in downtown St. Louis. You can get the podcast of this show on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. If you've missed any of our previous guests, from Barry Greenstein to Greg Raymer to Vanessa Russo to Victor Ramden, you can get all of them right there. And you can subscribe and get them downloaded automatically via iTunes. Just click the link on thechipleader.com. We'll be back with the poker coach, Joe McGowan, right after this.
Now, back to the Lumiere Place Final Table, where Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris are talking poker on 590 The Fan KFNS.
We are live in the poker room at Lumiere Place Casino in downtown St. Louis, and happy to have you along, whether you're listening live on KFNS or to the podcast available on thechipleader.com. This portion of the show is brought to you by Broadway Truck Centers.
Broadway Truck Centers. And yes, the answer to the question is I am still working there. Every time I go online, every time I go anywhere, somebody asks me that question. I'm working there and proud to be. It's BroadwayTrucks.com, phone number 314-241-9140 for all your trucking needs. Service department, open longer than anywhere else in St. Louis. parts department as large as any of them in St. Louis, full rental department, full sales department. Come on down to Broadway Truck Centers for any of your trucking needs.
What kind of trucks have you sold recently?
Oh, we sell everything from reefers to dump trucks to whatever. There's getting to be a big demand now going because of the drop in the gas prices back to the pickups, mm-hmm. back to the SUVs. And those are now starting to pick up. And so if you are looking to move into one of those, there's some great deals on used trucks right now. 2- and 3-year-old ones are excellent pickup.
So not just new vehicles, but pre-owned vehicles, as you guys in the vehicle business like to say.
Yeah. And we a lot of times custom buy those, too. We'll have an order for a particular truck, and they're wanting something, and they give us a range, either a dollar range, a year range, a mileage range, a spec range, whatever it is. Go find this truck for me. That's what we do.
Broadway Truck Centers in downtown St. Louis, one of the sponsors of the Lumiere Place Final Table, with Paul Harris and Dennis Phillips and the poker coach, Joe McGowan, joining us again. Hi, Joe. How are you tonight?
Doing great, Paul. How you guys doing?
Last week, Joe, you started talking a little bit about tells. And you talked about taking notes on the players that you play against and breaking them down into different categories. And you started talking a little bit about the conscious tells that you spot in other players at the table. Do you have more of those, or should we move on to other categories?
Well, I would say we probably should move on just for the sake of time, and we could always come back. But the next one would be the unconscious tells.
Oh, and I will tell you, last week when I was sitting here, I watched Paul's eyebrows go up when you started talking about the chip count there and whether you give a higher figure or a lower figure or anything like that.
Yeah.
You know, and the other end of it, I've also seen Joe sit at a table and ask for it and then have the dealer go over and start counting, and Joe wants to reach up and plop that guy right back in his seat.
You know, let's talk about that for just a second here before you get to the tells, Joe, because this is something that a lot of players, myself included, and I'm sure Dennis does, and I know you do, use to try to discern information about your opponent by asking them how much you got in front of them.
Sure.
And one of the things that drives us all crazy is when it's not the player who answers.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's almost a guarantee that not only the dealer, but one or two, sometimes three players at the table will try to answer that question for the player that you asked that you're trying to get the information from. And, of course, it drives me nuts. I want to hear their voice. I want to see them if they're willing to kind of stack out their chips and count them out. You know, I want to have them tell me whether they think it's more or less to help me make a decision. I think it's a little bit of poker etiquette, and it may be just being a little bit of unknowingly trying to move the game along and be a good sport. But really, when you're not in the hand and someone asks something like that, you really should stay out of it. Because, you know, you could miss a large chip or two. Now, if you're playing at the Bellagio and they have the flags on the table, you know, $5,000 chips or those real good ones, those cranberries, $25,000 chips, one little chip, you know, you might think it's $28,000. It's really, you know, $58,000 that they have left. And it could trigger a quick all-in or, you know, a bluff or who knows what. You really just shouldn't see anything. Even between the player, if the player doesn't say anything, then the dealer might interject and have to come out the stack.
It really is, if the player isn't going to say anything, it really is only the dealer's job to tell you how much the other player has. But I want to ask you the reverse of that. What if I'm sitting at the table and you ask me how many chips I have left? What should I do?
Well, I think what you should do is...
Because I don't want to give off any tells to Joe McGowan. Yeah. I know that for a fact.
Yeah, you could really make a case for kind of being the kind of boring poker player like me that stacks them in groups of 20 and keeps them organized. You always want the big chips out front. That's another poker etiquette thing, that's, you know, a rule in tournament play. And it should be, even at a quick eye's glance, pretty close to what you have in chips. And you really shouldn't have to say much of anything. And you don't want to be rude, but you can almost just kind of point to your chips, and that would be it. You know, this is what I have left. If you have to splash out a stack that's in back to show, you know, the odd small chips, you know, maybe you just do that. But you really don't have to say anything. I would always try to give the exact number of what I have. It does get a little risky when we move on to those reverse tells if you're trying to trick people and lead people, because better players will pick off those reverse tells and know you're doing it on purpose because it's obvious to the better players. You want to be careful. I think a Jesus Ferguson type approach, just the same thing, and not giving off much of anything is really the way to go, and then no one knows if they're strong at any given time.
Is it of paramount importance then that I remain quiet? Maybe I use my hands to indicate to you how many chips I have. I point to my stack. I splash out a stack of maybe six big chips that I may have on top or something like that. But should I remain quiet at all costs?
Well, you know, I remember back to Victor's show, which I loved. He gave great advice, but just thinking of myself, if I'm playing, you know, in a big game that maybe I almost shouldn't be in, or if I'm playing in a tournament and I'm against some of the game's greatest players, I might tend to be a little quiet because I feel they're going to pick stuff off of me. If I'm playing in my local, you know, 5, 10, 20 game or 25, 50 game that I'm comfortable with and players that I'm playing with, I might be the most talkative player at the table, because I'm trying to get information from them, and I'm confident, and I'm comfortable, and I'm really in my, you know, in my place where, you know, I can pick off of them, and I think it's less likely they're going to pick off of me. So I think it just depends upon who's asking the question, what type of game you're in, what type of situation you're in, and what you're trying to give off. If you think you're going to give off information, I'd go on the quiet side. If you think you might be able to outplay them and use a little Daniel Agrano type, you know, talking and get them to tip their hand a little bit, go ahead and go for it.
Dennis, what do you tend to do? Because as I watched you at the final table at the November 9, there was one hand that you played against Ivan Demidov, not the big ace-king versus ace-queen hand, but another one later on where he asked you how many chips you had in front of you, and you said, oh, around 20, meaning around 20 million at that point. Is that something where you think to yourself, I shouldn't say anything, or I should say as little as possible, or do you mind vocalizing at a point like that?
I don't mind vocalizing. I don't know whether it's a good or a bad thing, but I really don't mind vocalizing. But what I'll do a lot of times is I'll just push the chips up there in separate stacks so they can see all the stacks and just let them do the counting. Be done with it. I used to all the time, I would go ahead and count them down and do all this other. Now, the only way I would do that now is if I was stalling for time. You know, just basically, you know, taking my time, doing it. Wanted him to think and think and think, because the longer he thinks, the better it is for me.
And while you're doing that, and I'll ask both of you this, both Dennis and Joe, while you're counting out your chips like that, are you also watching him to see his reaction?
Oh, God, yeah. Why wouldn't you? I mean, that's the only reason you're counting him out, is to watch his reaction, see what he's doing.
Joe, are you getting tells off a guy that way?
Well, I mean, really, Paul, you're always trying to get tells. You're always trying to get information. You're always trying to put pieces to the puzzle to make the proper decision when it's back on you, if it's not on you at that point. And you're always trying to figure out what's the perfect size bet. You know, this much, that much, or even more, or all in. That's going to achieve what it is you're trying to do. So, yeah, you're definitely, at all times, when you're playing poker, you really need to be aware of what you're doing, you're getting off, and what you're trying to pick up from the opponent.
Joe not only tries to get tells when you're at the table, you can't go wash your hands, you can't go to eat dinner with him, but what, he's going to try and get some sort of tell off you, I think.
At dinner, he's probably trying to get a tell about whether you're going to pick up the check.
Dennis is actually a pretty generous guy. I usually pick up the lunches, he picks up the dinners, and I'm very happy with that deal.
We're talking with Joe McGowan, the poker coach here at the Lumiere Place Final Table. We're live in downtown St. Louis. Every Tuesday here on 590 The Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com. And before we go on with Joe talking about tells you should watch for, let's talk about this casino that we're in, which just a couple weeks ago started some new table games, including one new one called Blackjack Switch, which Dennis was very intrigued by. Have you gone over and played this yet?
I have not had a chance to yet. I keep getting tied up with a 5-10 table here for some reason.
Yeah, me too. Blackjack Switch is a game where you play two blackjack hands at once, and you can switch the down cards, which seems like it would be giving you a much better chance. The only thing that is the downside, I think, is that they don't pay 3-2 if you get blackjack on those hands, because obviously if you got two aces in one hand and two jacks in the other, you make the switch, you hit two blackjacks, they're not going to pay you 3-2 on both of those. But it's just one of the new games they've got on the floor here at Lumiere. And every time you come in, make sure you pick up your $500,000 spell check game piece. They're playing this until the end of March. $500,000 in the total prize pool. You could win $100,000 or electronics and more. You get your game piece with every 50 points you earn daily, with every blackjack you hit, with every promotional win. All sorts of ways you can get in on the $500,000 prize pool for this game called Spellcheck here at Lumiere Place, the home of the Lumiere Place Final Table, the show with Paul Harris and Dennis Phillips and the poker coach, Joe McGowan. Now, Joe, let's go on and talk a little bit about more tells. I actually interrupted you right at the beginning of our conversation as you were going to talk more about the unconscious tells to watch in other players.
Sure. Well, the unconscious fouls, you know, those are the ones that players don't even realize they're doing. I have a good friend of mine. I won't say his name. I don't want to embarrass him. But for about 2 years, guys, 2 years, I kept telling my friend every time you have a humongous, huge hand, he would do something specific with his face, which really would kind of indicate disappointment. You know, a flop comes out, and he looks at it with a disappointing look. And then all of a sudden, something strange happens. He makes a big bet at it, you know, or someone bets, and then he makes a big raise. So he really gave away his hand unconsciously. He wasn't even aware that he was making a look of disappointment, if you will, as the flop came out, and he hit a stack, or he hit a, you know, he made a flush or whatever it was from the flop. So he gave his hand away that way without realizing. He had no idea he would do it. I would tell him afterwards, because we're friends, you know, hey, this is what you're doing. It's great to team up with someone. No collusion. No collusion at all, but, you know, having a poker buddy that you share and you try to help and kind of go back and forth with that way. But he would swear to me for years that he could never do this. He didn't even believe me that he was that unaware. Another one that I love, if you're playing in a game, the seats that I don't like are the 1-9 seat. Those are my least favorite.
And the those are the ones directly to the left and right of the dealer.
Directly to the left and right of the dealer, and then directly in front of the dealer, the 4, 5, or 6. Many times, if you get any of those seats, for instance, say I'm directly to the left of the dealer, I'm in the 1 seat, and let's just say someone's in the 5. Now the flop comes out 10, 3, king. And when you look at your opponent, say their first act, as soon as that flop comes out and it's 10, 3, king, if they're looking to one side or the other and they bet, say they're looking more towards the 10 and they bet, they typically have the 10. They don't have the king. People will instinctively, unaware, look at the card that hit them. If they had the king, he would look to the other side of the flop, directly the other side. King. Now, it's not always. None of this stuff is always, and none of this stuff stands alone. You want to take bits of this information, and hopefully you have as many as 10, 11, or 12 things combined with your card and the whole situation of making a decision. But this could be one tell that I love that's very, very powerful and very, very good and very, very common to see, but it's a little harder to see if you're in the 2 seat and your opponent's in the 3 seat. A little harder to tell what they're looking at. Maybe they're wearing sunglasses and you can't see at all. But that would also be another unconscious.
Oh, that's a good one. I like that one a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the first one you mentioned of those two, of the look on a player's face, sometimes, as you say, it's something completely unconscious, but it surprises me that you told your friend about this over and over again, and he still didn't try to do anything about it, like lock in some sort of stone face regardless of what the flop was.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's really an incredible thing. You know, a lot of people, they're just totally unaware, and I'm sure myself too, you know, totally unaware of certain things that you're doing when you're weak or when you're strong. Marginal as well, but it seems to happen much more typically when players are strong. You get a lot more reactions, you get a lot more tells when people are actually strong.
Okay. Those are a couple of unconscious tells. Any others?
Yeah, actually, I mean, the list would go on, honestly, Paul, for hundreds. But, you know, quickly, I'd say the feet and legs. I would call it like a nervous excitement sway. A lot of times when a player flops a big hand, you know, their feet or legs will kind of sway a little bit and just kind of move a little bit. It sounds a little crazy. But these are things that you want to look for really to get as confirmed tells. Now, if you just see one thing one time, that might be enough if you're 50-50 to put you one way or the other, folding, calling, or raising. But if you've seen this with a player and you've been playing with him for 12 hours in a tournament at your table, and you've seen him have the nuts 4 times in 12 hours, and you've seen him bluff, you know, 7 times in 12 hours, and all 4 times his feet and legs kind of swang, and you had a seat where you could see that, certainly sometimes you're not going to have that. But then you would get that confirmed tell on this player, which would be another category. And you could use it that way, if that makes sense.
And as part of that, Joe, something I call the shirt tell, which is
could
if
be,
you're playing...
You know, I don't see that quite as much. A lot of people, you know, they'll just have kind of that second-grade kid, you know, nervous, just kind of ready to go, full of energy, and the legs are hopping and shaking all the time. So some of that stuff, you know, hey, the guy, you know, itched his nose. What does that mean? You know, a lot of times it means absolutely nothing. And a lot of times, you know, someone will have a lot of this stuff just in general. But it's when when you're not in the hand particularly, and you can pay attention to the action, Paul, and you can see that all of a sudden here's something different. There's something all of a sudden I've never seen this player doing. Boom, he's doing it. Wow, he rolled over, he had a straight, he flopped a straight. And then 2 hours later, you see it again. Wow, he flopped a set. And he did that same thing. That's where now you have one of my favorites is firm telling this player, where it's great for when you play at the local casinos, you play against all you know, the guys and girls that you play against on a regular basis. I'll really log this stuff. Please keep it in your memory bank. I would strongly recommend it. To keep it in a poker journal, or keep it in you know, the iPhone, or you know, whatever it is that you use. And
I guess for the sake of listeners who don't know what I was talking about when I said the shirt tell, we should kind of explain what that is. And this is a tell where you're sitting at the other end of a table from somebody. Sometimes you're sitting right next to them, but most often if you're sitting in, say, the 2 or 3 seat and they're in the 8 or 9 seat at a table and you can't see what their legs are doing, sometimes you could tell that they are really, they really got all of a sudden nervous leg syndrome because they've got a huge hand because you can watch the flop as it comes out and you can see that their shirt is moving, that it's not moving because they're breathing in a certain way, but that their shirt is moving up or down. And in many instances, that can be a tell about what somebody is doing at the poker table, and you can use that as evidence against them. Anyway, Joe had to run. We'll catch up with him next week for more poker coach tips from Joe McGowan here at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. You know, he's got a new baby, so the emergencies happen quickly, and sometimes he has to run. This portion of the show is brought to you by PokerStars.net.
PokerStars.net, the place that I play in all the time. As they say, the clock is ticking, but time never runs out. 24 hours a day this is going on. Whether you want a short match or a marathon, you can get it in there. If you want to play for small chips, big chips, anything in the world, it's there. I don't care what your favorite game is. You like Omaha? You like Raz? You like Horse? You like Texas Hold'em? The games are there. It's the largest poker site in the world. PokerStars.net. Just play your cards right, and you can find the poker star in you.
And for those of you who've been emailing and asking, and by the way, the email address for the show is DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com. We'd love to get your comments on the show and also questions that you may have or hand histories you'd like us to talk about. But one of the questions we have is, when are you going to do another free roll? And we're working on it.
Yes.
We don't have a definite answer for you, but we hope to have another one for you in just a couple of weeks.
Yeah, we will see what happens with it. It went over very well. Again, thanks to all the people that participated in that first one, almost 600 people. We will do it again. We're getting some advice on ways to maybe change and improve it, but we are definitely looking into it. We will definitely have one if at all possible.
We'll have details here on the Lumiere Place Final Table radio show and the podcast and also on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. And this portion of the show is brought to you by the Poker Players Alliance, the nonprofit group that fights for you, the poker player. They lobby Capitol Hill to get the UIGEA, the horrible law that Congress passed, overturned. They fight for you in both the online and offline worlds, and they represent tens of thousands of poker players who play both online and in home games and in cash games and in tournaments and in ring games all around this country. They have lots of poker players who have joined up, and you should be one of them. To get details on what the Poker Players Alliance does, go to their website, ppa.org. They're trying to raise awareness of poker as a game of skill, not of luck. And if you're a poker player at some time in your life, you've had that conversation with people who say, how can you play cards? Don't you know it's all luck? Well, if you're a good poker player, you know that it's more skill than luck, and that's what the PPA tries to teach people.
Hey, 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 those are the people I like to play against. Come on now.
Yes, the people who play against Dennis, it's all luck.
Well,
but for everybody else, go to ppa.org, the Poker Players Alliance, one of the sponsors of the Lumiere Place Final Table, with Paul Harris and Dennis Phillips, and now the poker lawyer, Josh Schindler. Hi, Josh, how are you?
Hi, Paul, and hi, Dennis. I think it's pretty clear that poker is a game of skill and not a game of luck. I played in that free roll, and it's safe to assume that I was one of the first 10% to go out. I tried to get a friendly wager going with Dennis.
I would have felt guilty taking your money.
I don't.
So I think just by my skill level, it shows you that poker is not a game of luck. It's a game of skill. Today we're talking about something that I think most people who have played online are very much aware of, and it's called the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act, of 2006, otherwise known as the UIGEA. And basically, this was passed by the Republican administration. The essential purpose of this act was to try to make it illegal to gamble online. The fact of the matter is that Greg Raymer, as we all know, who was on this show, who's a lawyer from Missouri, said in an interview the UIGEA did absolutely nothing. It has zero legal impact on poker. The UIGEA says that it is illegal to engage in financial transaction with illegal online gambling sites. It doesn't define what those are. And so Greg Raymer concluded, a lawyer, online poker isn't illegal under the federal law, so UIGEA doesn't apply to those sites that only service poker, which is PokerStars. Which is PokerStars. And here, ultimately, gentlemen, is the issue. When this act passed, the Department of Justice sent a scare through casinos such as Harrah's and everything else and basically said, look, you cannot do business with these companies or we're going to come after you. What the Department of Justice never said is they've never, ever utilized the Federal Wiretap Act or anything else to go against internet gambling for anything other than sports. And why is that? We've got to conclude that in since the internet's been in existence and since the Wiretap Act has been in existence, the Wire Act, I apologize, has been in existence, why haven't they utilized it? Because they know that they'll never be able to get a conviction for anything other than sports betting. And that's why Raymer can say, as a lawyer, very publicly, this act does not work. Now, we've got some supporters. Interestingly enough, Barney Frank has been carrying the water to say, look, the UIGEA should not apply to internet gambling activities other than poker. And he's recently put forth some legislation to try to make it clear that the UIGEA does not apply to this type of activity.
So as he tries to do that, are there chances that this will be overturned or that we'll get new legislation that carves out an exception for poker in the near future?
Well, and that's a very interesting question. First of all, the UIGEA really had no force whatsoever until the waning days of the Bush administration. And he enacted a certain set of rules called midnight rules, which you could basically do without any interference as he was whisked away after, I think, what many people will agree may not have been the best administration we've ever had in the United States. And he enacted this, which gave some force to the UIGEA. Well, one of the things that Obama can do is vacate those midnight rules. But so, A, that's the hope that Obama will come in and vacate the midnight rules. There seems to be a division, and I'm interested if people would write to Josh at thepokerlawyer.com whether there should be a carve-out just for poker or whether there should be a carve-out for all internet gambling except, and I use the word except, for sports betting. So, for example, blackjack. Barney Frank has taken the position that I don't want to carve out just for poker. I want all internet gambling other than that related to sportsbook to be in play.
See, as a libertarian, I don't think it's the government's business to tell you what to do with your money in any case, regardless of what you're betting on. So that's what my biggest opposition to the UIGEA was in any form and for any bet that you want to place.
The absurdity, look, guys, let's be honest. This billion, we are in the worst economic crisis we've ever been in. We need money, and billions upon billions of dollars is being wasted because the government is interfering with our right to gamble. Mm-hmm. If I want to do something in my home and make my decisions, I want to do it. And I want you all to write to Josh at thepokerlawyer.com, and I want to hear your opinions on this, and I'd like you all to write to your congressmen and senators.
All right, that's the poker lawyer, Josh Schindler, here at the Lumiere Place Final Table. Before we wrap things up, Dennis, you're about to get on a plane for a very long trip to...
Absolutely.
To where?
Uruguay. I'm going to be on
they
a
play
beach
poker in Uruguay?
They absolutely do. It's going to be down there for the LAPT, the Latin American Poker Tour.
You went to Argentina for one of their events earlier,
no, I went
right?
to Chile.
I'm sorry.
To Uruguay now. I will be going to Argentina next month.
Wow.
Yes. I will make 3 trips down there in the space of about 90 days, and their tours down there, and it's excellent.
Will you do me a favor
excellent.
On this trip? I know it's going to be at some beach resort. Touch the water. Just once. Go out and touch the water.
Not a problem for you. You want me to bring you back a sample of it or something?
No, you don't have to bring me back ocean water. That's fine. I just want the anecdote of what it was like for you to actually get out of the building, touch sand, and walk out to the water, something you've never done on any of these trips.
Guaranteed. I will make it to the water sometime, somehow.
All right. Next week, we'll have stories about Dennis's trip to Uruguay and his recent trip to go play at a WSOP circuit event at Caesars in Atlantic City.
Yes.
All of that coming up next week, 6 o'clock Tuesday night. You can join us live here at the Lumiere Place Poker Room or listen to the show here on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com. And, of course, catch up with the podcast anytime on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. Our email address is dennisphillipspoker@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from you, and we'll see you next week.